नमो तस्सा भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स। Homage to the Buddha, the blessed, noble, and fully self-awakened one. So the topic for this month is restraint. So I've written something, so I'll talk to what I've written. It's a bit more organized, you know. So I say the Buddha is very big on restraint, samvara. And we need to know why. We need to see how it affects our sense of agency and our self-worth. A sense of agency means a control, your control over your life. Now, whenever I reflect on the Dharma and practice, I always go back to the starting point, you know, where all the miseries have their root. And that, of course, is the self. So this self is a relationship. It's a relationship with the world we find ourselves in. And that world is the world of the six senses. Remember, the Buddha describes consciousness by the sense base, eye consciousness, ear consciousness. And don't forget, the mind is also understood as a sense base. And it's the world, it's that's the world we seek happiness in. Not that there isn't any happiness there, it's just that we can't maintain it, we can't trap it, simply because everything arises and passes away. So now we know all this, and we know it through our readings and listenings, and we know it through the practice of vipassana, where we try not to get caught up in the fantasies and the stories we tell ourselves. Now we know that attachment and indulgence to anything we enjoy, from lollipops to intimate relations, will cause some degree of suffering or unsatisfactoriness. Yet we persist. We persist because the desires have a hold on us. And there's often also the fear that we will lose some level of happiness if we let go of what gives us happiness. So let us first contemplate the loss of agency. This means we've lost control over some part of our lives. The desire takes over. Even when we make strong acts of will, I will not scroll, in a moment of inattention, there we are, scrolling. And even when we're doom scrolling, and we know it's cultivating despair, yet we scroll. So this used to be called a lack of self-discipline. But these days, nobody wants to hear about discipline. And it seems to have gone out of our education system. So when was the last time, actually, that you ever heard the word discipline, have some self-discipline? So the common, there is a connotation in the word of punishment, of course, but the original meaning comes from the word learning, a disciple. And to learn, we need to put our minds to it. We need to have self-discipline. So here we have a situation where the ardent meditator knows they need to give up late nights to rise early and practice before setting off to work. Yet for all the determination, they still get caught up in social media and Netflix. And what they're actually doing may be wholesome, but it means they miss out on this morning practice, which they give a lot of importance to. Something has to give, and that is the role of restraint. How does it feel when, after all your effort, you don't seem to be able to get rid of a habit that you know is harmful to you and may be harmful to another's? So anger is often a good candidate. It comes out as sarcasm, spite, outright rage, clever digs that spike and wound. Turned in when it beats you up, despises you, and hammers home how worthless you are. So here we need that alert awareness, mindfulness that senses when the triggers come, and not indulge in the rising anger, but actually mentally park it. We're not suppressing it, but to put it to one side and then raise goodwill, you see, lay over it. When we turn inwards afterwards at some time, you know, we can embrace it with a sense of care and just allow it to manifest. So some part of the heart is diseased. Now, here's the Buddha's description of right effort. It's when a mendicant generates enthusiasm, tries, makes an effort, exerts the mind, and strives so that immoral, unskillful qualities don't arise. They generate enthusiasm, try, make an effort, exert the mind, and strive so that immoral, unskillful qualities that have arisen are given up. That's the bad side. The good side is obviously balancing it. So they generate enthusiasm, try, make an effort, exert the mind, and strive so that skillful qualities that have not arisen do so. And they generate enthusiasm, try, make an effort, exert the mind, and strive so that skillful qualities that have arisen are not lost, but increase, mature, and are fulfilled by development. This is called right effort. Now, you'll also see that in the discourse on how to establish mindfulness. Yeah. So here we have four ways which the Buddha asks us to exercise, through which we get the purpose for our restraint. So the first is, of course, the way of morality and ethics. If what we're doing is harmful, then obviously we should restrain ourselves, harmful to ourselves or others, or both ourselves and others. It may be that someone has decided to become a vegetarian or vegan on moral rather than health ground. So now they have a connection with the suffering of farm animals. Because of past habit, they may find themselves buying fish and chips, that iconic British meal. Now, fish often don't quite make it into the definition of sentient beings. As a monk in Sri Lanka once quipped, fish are considered self-propelling, animated vegetable. I've heard people say they can't feel pain because they're cold, such as when our fingers freeze, we don't feel anything. So, accepting that fish are sentient beings, that person may feel guilty while they're eating, and they avoid the feeling by eating more quickly, stuffing themselves. Now, the second restraint is by way of mindfulness. So, while eating the fish, such a person who's practiced vipassana will become more acutely aware of any feelings of guilt or remorse. So much so, it almost spoils the pleasure. This is where guilt has become a guardian to warn us of such behavior. But where there's unskillful action, there will also follow unwholesome consequences. Allied to this is the awareness of the six sense bases. In hot weather, the shapely bodies of women and men come into view, and upon seeing, erotic feelings may arise. This is natural in the sense that it has a biological conditioning. But then, do we turn away or and refuse to indulge, or do we linger and develop lust? Lust can become obsessive, but even at a low level, left ungratified, lust leaves a feeling of discomfort and inner discomposure, a feeling that consequence encourages. That feeling, recognizing it, encourages us to restrain ourselves. Such practice is a direct way of understanding the Second Noble Truths, the cause of suffering. The noble truth of the cause of suffering, O monks, is this: it is the craving which produces re-becoming, rebirth accompanied by passionate greed, and finding fresh delight now here, now there, namely, craving for sense pleasures, craving for becoming, craving for non-becoming, not wanting stuff. And it fulfills one of the right intentions, I prefer the right attitudes of the second step of the Noble Eightfold Path, namely renunciation, which is gently pulling ourselves away from indulgence and attachments. And you could argue that renunciation is the whole of the spiritual path. Finally, it is the understanding of the direct experience in our sitting and ordinary daily life of the unwholesome qualities of indulgence and attachment that develops the wisdom to practice restraint. So, samvara is the spiritual exercise of refraining from fulfilling desires that we perceive to be harmful. There's a holding back of that energy. But as always, if done with annoyance or self-hatred, self-accusation, that would be just suppressing it. Not transforming it. Moreover, any annoyance and self-hatred will simply reinforce those attitudes. Instead, we wait for it to pass, as when we wait to cross the road, waiting for cars to pass. Yeah. So this allows the fuel of the desire to be expended, the habit to be weakened, and the more we do this, just like any exercise, it becomes easier. The more we resist temptations, the better we feel about ourselves. simply because we've taken back control. The more we feel in charge of our lives, the more we follow the ways of skillful actions, the more we feel happy about ourselves. The more we feel satisfied and contented with ourselves, the more our self-worth grows. And self-worth is that deep inner feeling and knowing of one's own goodness. Now, one way to develop strong resolution is to fast. So you'll find some kind of fasting in most religions, such as Lent for Christians and Ramadan for Muslims. In the Buddhist teaching, it's included when a lay person takes the 8 precepts and they undertake not to eat after midday. Now, this is not to be confused with dieting for health's sake or fasting as a practice of self-mortification, sort of beating oneself up, but to become aware of any attachment we have to eating and drinking. Particularly feelings of hunger are one thing, but the inability to stop ourselves from immediately reacting, hence constant snacking, is another. So in my own case, giving up a cup of tea in the morning requires total commitment. Now, there's also a practice that was developed by Saint Augustine. In his autobiography, he tells us that as a young man, he had difficulty restraining his lust and prayed, "Give me chastity and continence, O Lord, but not yet." So that's an honest confession. Now, there are 4 parts to this, and some of you who've been on retreat with me will know them. So it's can, ought, want, and will. Now, we might sometimes fool ourselves and say that we cannot give up tea and coffee. But when we look a bit closer, there's usually a won't. So the first step is to speak gently into our hearts, directly into our hearts. It's, I can, you know, I can refrain from drinking too much tea, etc. Yeah. And I can add for my own benefit and the benefit of others. And you've got to wait. You've got to keep repeating that. You say, I can do it. I can, until, especially if there's a won't in the way. Right? So you keep saying that until you feel it's digested. And there is definitely a knowing that one can give up tea, right? And then we have to accept full responsibility. So that's the next step. I ought to, my own benefit and the benefit of others, yeah? And then once that's taken on, again, you have to feel a bit of digestion there, a bit of acceptance. Once that's done, it's normally not so difficult to get that want. Yeah, I want to do it. You know, this is what I really want to do. It's my own benefit, benefit of others. And then finally, of course, that strong, determined act of will. So I will do it. You see, when the occasion arises, will. And of course, you can practice this with virtue as well, you see. So ought, can, ought, want, will. So now I personally find this best done right in the morning. And if I want to get up on when the bell goes, I do it before I go to sleep. See? I can get up when the alarm goes. I think you'll find it really effective in, you know, in everyday practice. So what I'd like to do now is to actually do this practice and then just slide into the meditation. So if you find yourself in a nice, you know, meditative posture, so you can either say, I can refrain from, or I resist the temptation to, whatever works for you, right? Now, what you've got to choose is some habit that you have which you'd like to be rid of, or at least lessen, let it have a less hold on you, or something like that, yeah? So if you choose that sort of habit or attitude, yeah? And then once you've chosen it, so you just very gently repeat into your heart, you see, I can refrain from, and it's for my own benefit and the benefit of others. So when you're doing this by yourself, you can also obviously take a bit more time if this isn't enough time. But once you can get that feeling of you can resist the temptation, then we go on to the next one. I ought to do it for my own benefit and the benefit of others. Once that's been developed within us to a point where we really take on that responsibility, then we can move into a cajoling the heart. Yes, I want to refrain. And then, as you feel that that now is really built up, we then make that act of will. I will refrain. You can add when the situation comes, it doesn't really matter, but just getting that commitment. And although this talk has been about refraining from something which is unwholesome, we can, just to finish off, use these in order to develop a virtue. So in the same way, we develop a virtue that we'd like to develop more. So I can develop this virtue for my own benefit and the benefit of others. I ought to. I want to. And finally, I will. And so we can begin our period of meditation.